Jets fans, it's Dr. Emma here. I am here with two of our regular contributors to review round 17, which saw us draw at home to Western United. Then we'll be talking about W League, where we won in round 9 against Adelaide, also at home. And then we will be doing a preview of the F3/Wooden Spoon Derby. To do that with me tonight, I have two of our regular Jetstream contributors. Firstly, hello, Lukey.
Hello, Emma. How are you?
Feeling a little bit rusty. I don't think I've done this in a little while.
That's okay. We'll get through it.
I've been adulting a little bit too hard of late. Yes. Also to join us tonight.
Haven't we all?
There he is, claiming to also be an adult. Welcome, Matt.
Hey, Em. Hey, Luke. Yes, it has been a little while since we've all gotten together, but it's also been a little while since the Jets have managed to take a point out of a game.
That is an excellent point. Let's start then, boys, with our opening question. Given the lack of form that the Jets have been in lately, I found myself after the match on the weekend saying to my friends, at least we have the big bash because our Sydney Sixers have made it into the grand final there. So my opening question for you boys, I'll go to you first, Lukey. What's your best sport? What's your favourite sport that isn't football or isn't the Jets?
That's a very good question. I don't know. I don't really know if I follow too many other sports other than football. You mentioned the BBL before. I've watched more of it this year than I ever have, I think. I've been watching it nearly every night during the regular rounds. And like you, I am excited that the Sixers are in the grand final. That is cool. And I've picked them because I like the pink jerseys they have. But otherwise, apart from football, I mean, you know, occasionally watch the league, watched a bit of the cricket during the summer, the test matches and everything, and maybe watched two matches of the tennis, and I think one of them was Kyrgios against Nadal and the other was Barty losing the semi-final. But yeah, it's I'd probably go with one of those.
So you're kind of a one sport man.
Yeah, pretty much. I think it's all sort of in the one basket there. And, you know, if there's sport on, I'll watch it, but I don't follow any team anywhere near as religiously as I do the Jets.
All right, so you dabble. That's cool. That's cool. Matt, what about you? Do you have a second favourite sport or another favourite sport to complement your football watching?
Yeah, it's definitely not NRL. Kind of like Luke, I would put sport on if it was on TV. If I had to pick between two others, though, I do watch a bit of NBA or at least follow the 76ers, and I think that's more an Australian thing, like, you know, following how Ben Simmons is going over anything else. Otherwise, I don't mind watching the darts, if only for the crowd participation and the costumes.
180. Nice,
nice. 180.
Possibly. Some people will say that darts is not a sport, but I know there's a lot of darts fans on the Jets stream, more than one. So, yes, we will allow that. I think my second favourite, I'm not 100% certain, is a sport either. I'm a WRC girl. I like the car racing. But I am really enjoying the Big Bash this year, maybe because the Sixers are doing well, maybe just because it's fun, been to a few games, and it is a nice atmosphere. And I can't believe how many people just keep on showing up for the Big Bash, no matter how poorly some of the teams perform. So hopefully we can get some of that into the A-League. I don't know.
I have actually never been to a Big Bash game, but it's something that every year I say, oh, yeah, I'll go next season, and then I never do. But one day I do plan on actually going to one of their games.
It is good fun. They really have captured the crowd atmosphere in a way that we haven't really managed to do in the A-League yet. But it is a very different kettle of fish. So, you know, can't compare apples and oranges, I guess. Okay, well, good opening question. Let's talk about the actual game. Actually, no, before we talk about the game, let's talk about the goddamn temperature on Saturday, was it, that we played? I should know that, professional. It was 38 degrees at kickoff, Matt. We had 5,400 fans show up to watch the game there in person. Do you think the game should have been played, Matt? And how awesome are those 5,400 fans for sitting in that heat?
Part B, anyone that turned up deserved a medal, and it should have been free drinks, whatever you fancy, or free ice blocks for the kids just for actually dragging yourself to the game. On that note, really sort of disappointed to see the sort of tweets going through the socials about, you know, apparently security asking, you know, kids to tip their water bottles out at the gate. Something like that is an absolute travesty, and I know it's been brought up with – I know it's not Jets – the Jets that actually hire the security for the stadium. I know that's independent stadium management, but that's something that's just absolutely ridiculous, and it should never happen on days like that. Should the game have been played? No. I think this is, again, another situation where, you know, where Foxtel have sort of got the A-League by the short and curlies, and they're dictating when games need to be played because of, you know, the current TV deal that's in place. But let's face it, you know, it was way too hot to be running around there in the middle. It was way too hot to even be sitting on that Eastern Grandstand, let alone running around. It was probably about 150% humidity at some stages. So the products, you know, the product certainly wasn't helped by the fact that and there's my puppy breaking through the barriers. The product certainly wasn't helped by the temperature on Saturday afternoon.
So Fox Sports does claim that it has nothing to do with them as to whether or not it runs. They say it's purely a sports decision. It has nothing to do with the coverage. But yeah, and excruciating.
And they don't support Sydney FC. Sorry, Matt? FC either. And Fox Sports, they don't support Sydney FC either.
Yes, well, I guess they can say whatever they like, yes. Luke, you were at the match. I saw you in the post-match video, and officially, yes. Luke, you were at the match. I saw you in the post-match video. You looked, I'm going to say drained is the word. How did it feel on the ground?
I was up at the top of the Western Grandstand for that entire game, and anyone that's been at the stadium knows that the Western Stand's completely in shade in the afternoon. You get a decent breeze most of the time up there. And I was sweating like there was no tomorrow up there. I don't know how on earth the game was allowed to go ahead, especially when they, after the A-League game, then postponed the women's game for 20 minutes because of the heat. Can they not handle heat better than the men? Or, like, come on. What's 20 minutes going to do there? Realistically, the men should have been pushed after the women. You probably would have got as much of a crowd there because everyone would have, the people that didn't go because of the heat would have turned up. But then obviously, you know, you lose families and stuff, but it would have evened out, and it would have been a better performance than what it was on the field from the teams. Because as I said, I struggled sitting in the shade. I don't know how on earth the players were running around in the sun for 2 hours. It's absolutely ridiculous that it was expected of them. And as Bozza said on Fox after the game, what's it going to take for something to change about this? Does a player need to collapse, or does a player need to pass out or something before it's taken seriously? But, like, come on. It was ridiculous all day. And, you know, this is something that's come up a couple of times in the league this season. Out west in Perth and Adelaide, they've been subjected to similar conditions, and it's no good for anyone. Like, even if you are in the shade, you're watching a game between two teams whose objective is to survive with as little casualties as possible. Like, it's not worth it for anyone. And we go into next week's game. Yeah, we had a day over the Mariners, but, you know, both of these teams are coming off weeks where, like, games where they've just gone in ridiculous heat and humidity and everything, that this, it's not even just a 1 week problem, it's a multiple week problem. And I don't think any sort of real conditioning to your body will ever get you prepared for that.
100% agree.
Yeah, no, absolutely agree.
Oh, sorry, Em.
Nope, go ahead.
Oh, I 100% agree with Luke's point about like the quality of the product being affected, and especially for like if being a televised game, how do you expect to to attract the casuals, or how do you expect to attract like the Euro snobs that only watch the Premier League when you're serving up stuff like that? The guys were absolutely buggered by the end of the game. I'm surprised to see that like, a lot of them were still able to walk around, let alone run and chase a ball.
I'm surprised that Bobby Burns survived it. And it's not a surprise at all that the game ended. I think we had an internet cut out there, and I've spoken over you, Matt. Sorry, we'll see what happens there in the wash-up. But I'm not surprised at all that it ended up in a nil-all draw, and that's not surprising at all given the effort that the boys must have put in even to just stay on the field. Okay, so stats from this game. Dave hasn't sent me anything, but luckily the internet exists. Stats man, you're fired. I guess the biggest stat that we're going to talk about next is the shots. Depending on which website you look at, we have 26 or 27 shots on goals from the Jets, and none of them converted, four from Western United. Six of ours on target, two of theirs on target. And the possession I was surprised to see was 60 to us, 40 to them. It actually felt like a little bit more to us watching the game. Luke, let's talk about those shot statistics. Apparently we've set a new record for how many shots you can have without actually scoring a goal.
It was a very typical FIFA style game, the typical game where controllers get broken, where you have a billion shots to very minimal and come away with a 1-0 loss. I'm surprised we didn't come away with the loss given how much we dominated the game. But as you said, that's a ridiculous number of shots. And I mean, you go back and look at the highlights of the game, how many of those were actually clear cut? Or how many of those were just sort of lashes from 25 out hoping to get something on it? Because yes, Weston didn't get too many chances. I can only really remember one from Berisha late on that fizzled into nothing. But really, there was the non-shot from Dimi from 6 yards out that I don't know how we didn't score there. There was a couple of one-on-ones that we probably should have finished. But we're coming up against, again, another keeper in Curto who has the game of their life whenever we play them, and somehow managed to keep us scoreless. But thinking back to a lot of the shots, a lot of them just felt like they were outside of the box where there was no real danger. Thurgate had a really good one that only just maybe missed by a couple of inches. But we didn't really get ourselves into too decent of a position to really get a clear-cut shot off. A lot of it was, I think, Weston were just camping. They were just parking the bus for most part of the game, especially in that second half. They just looked absolutely knackered and just looked like they wanted to play on the counter and just get a chance when they could break and everything. But, yeah, 26 shots and no goals at this level isn't really acceptable. You'd expect that at least, if not only, you know, if not scoring, you'd expect at least a bit more than 6 of 26 to be on target, which is something that we desperately need to improve on if we're going to avoid the spoon this year.
Yeah, it's almost worse than no shots, right?
I mean, I guess that's a tough one because if you're having no shots, you'd be a bit more concerned about the creativity in the team. And yeah, that's probably an issue as well at the moment. But it's the same as last year where we were getting chances. We just weren't doing anything with them once we got them. I'd probably, you know, you walk away feeling like it's a loss because we had so many chances. But if we were struggling to create anything at all, you'd probably say that's a bit more of a concern that we're, you know, we can't even get through half the team, I guess.
Matt, do you agree? Where do you stand on this massive efficiency issue we're clearly having?
I think it's been the same problem basically for 2 years, and in saying that, I don't think that we'll see Dimi miss two chances like he did on the weekend, especially that first one that was like Braden Crowley esque. It was even the same end of the field, if memory serves. UG had an opportunity. Boogs had an opportunity. I think Thurgate had an opportunity. Like, everyone basically had a chance to score. Not to mention the number of times where, you know, crosses were put in and they either went over the head of everyone, or there was no one actually attacking the front post, which is a bit of a cardinal sin. It's crazy. Like, I think the guys would almost beg to play against Western United every week, you know, given that I think that, with the age of their squad and the fact that they've got a lot of older imports, everyone knew that they were going to struggle when the weather heated up. Both times we played them, they've been out without one of their big sort of midfield stars, like no Diamante this week. They missed Kone the first time we played them. We definitely dominated midfield, but we didn't really have we had nothing on the pointy end. And even in defence, you know, a lot of the times we looked, and that's my dog again, excuse me, guys. A lot of the times in defence, we still look like we could have been caught out. There are a couple of good shots that came in sort of late in the second half. Berisha with that sort of almost one-on-one in the first half that Italiano sort of got out to smother. We're just not looking convincing. You know, if that means that, you know, like that we have to sort of introduce O'Donovan, then maybe he can sort of strike up some kind of partnership with Arroyo, because Arroyo is looking less and less like an out-and-out striker. The more that you watch him, the more he seems to just be drifting wide. You know, who knows? But like, something's got to change, because at the moment, teams are quite happy to give us the ball. They're quite happy to sit back knowing we're not going to score, and then they're quite happy to take one or two chances and score off them. We saw it with Wellington last week. We've seen it again almost this week with Western United.
Well, firstly, hello, puppy. Welcome to the Jet Stream. Everyone wants to be on board, so that's lovely. do you think, picking up on what you said there, Matt, that Western United, bit of an older team, I think was the phrase that you used, and the heat, and we could have worn them out. Do you think Matt, do you think we had the right strategy with the subs, or do you think maybe thinking about that and the massive heat stress that the boys would have been under, do you think we should have gone to those subs a little bit sooner?
Look, I don't really have any problem with the way the subs were made. I think that Boogs and Tupper are always going to like it when a team's playing on the counter with, you know, a 36-year-old striker as the only one that's sort of been really deployed against them. And the whole three at the back system, a lot of the times we weren't even three at the back, we were two at the back, because if you notice, it was either Johnny or Topper that seemed to be pushing up into midfield, like into one of those holding roles a lot, which would have left us really, really like light at the back if it was against any other team. Like, I'd hate to see us do that against the, you know, an Adelaide with Miller, Usnik, or, you know, basically even a Central Coast, because they've got a little bit more pace than what Western United do. I thought that it was strange to bring Fitzy on so late in the game, and especially sort of replacing him for Bobby Burns, but that sort of signaled, I guess, a little bit of a change in sort of formation and certainly a little bit more change in intent, because I don't think that the ball had been out of Western United's half basically for, you know, all of the second half, other than the three or four shots that they managed to sort of fashion on the break. So I can't really sort of fault the subs there ever. I think it was just more a lack of end product.
I was a bit concerned that Burns might have been dead by the time Fitzy came on. He lasted very well in the heat, given that he's basically blue/see-through. So yeah, I thought that one could have gone a little bit earlier. I thought the first one going at the 58th ish minute. To have Thurgate come on for Hoffman was definitely the right decision. But yeah, maybe could have made those other two a little bit sooner given the heat, in my considered opinion. Luke, Matt mentioned there the Western United striker. Boogs versus Berisha was a bit of a running battle in this game. I'm not sure if you saw that at the ground or whether you needed the TV footage to see that. Did you notice those ongoing niggles that they were having against each other?
I did. And honestly, I was surprised that Boogard was able to, I guess, survive the entire game. I think just before halftime, maybe in injury time, there was an incident there where after Boogs had already been yellow carded for stopping Berisha for whatever reason, there was an incident where Berisha dropped to the ground and started rolling around, and they went to the VAR and they were looking at it for 2 minutes. The replays at the stadium looked as though Berisha had just fallen over with no contact at all from Boogard. But leading into halftime, I was thinking, oh my God, if Berisha comes back out in the second half, he is going to do whatever he can to get Boogard sent off. And in typical Jets fashion, Boogard will get sent off through no fault of his own. I thought Boogs absolutely bossed him all game. There didn't really seem to be much time or many times that Boogs lost out. In any sort of battle, he was always trying to push through and get first to the ball, winning headers. It was just the typical Bessart antics, I guess, if you want to call it that. That was really when Boogs sort of looked out of place. But he shut down the number of chances he got. I can only remember the one real shot he got. And there was a little where it looked as though he had gone down in the box very easily, which didn't even go to VAR check. But I thought it was something that, yeah, I did pick up on at the ground, and I thought Boogs absolutely smashed him.
Yep, fair assessment. I'm also surprised he managed to stay on the park. But it was an interesting battle to watch run. I think they were both giving as good as they got, and both were looking to get the other one sent off rather than to create any tactical advantage in the actual unsettling of the other player.
I think as well,
got away with it.
Sorry, I think in the two games since he's come back from injury, Boogs has looked a new player. He's looked very good. He's been getting up. There hasn't really been any mistakes that he's been prone to in the previous few years. So I think the club, especially with Lockie's injury, they probably would have been forced to play him regardless. But I think since he's come back, he's been a revelation for us and has just steadied the ship a little bit from the back and made us look a lot more confident, especially Johnny when he's been played at that three in the back role.
Matt, you agree?
I agree in part. I certainly think he's looked good over the last couple of weeks, but let's just sort of see how he goes when he comes up against Jamie McLaren or someone that's a little bit more mobile. Just on the whole niggle that was going on in the game, I thought the Risden was probably a little bit lucky to sort of escape some kind of sanction in the first half with his sort of retaliation on Burns. I know that sort of Burns seemed to go maybe hard, maybe 50-50, but to grab someone and slam him to the ground, you'd normally expect to see some kind of card come out for that.
Yeah, no, I was very surprised at that as well. And it's unclear to me, you know, the VAR rules keep changing. If you're not going to review someone smashing someone on the ground in an altercation off the ball or after the ball and the player's passed, what are you going to review? It's pretty unsportsmanly, but also, who's going to go on Bobby Burns? Like, Risden must have that small puppy dog thing where he thinks he's tougher than he is, because I wouldn't want to fight Bobby Burns.
No, Bobby's small, but he's got that angry, you can sense the anger in him, and I can imagine he'd be like a Jack Russell. He'd just be like a mongrel and just rip in any chance he got. He wouldn't care how big the opponent was in that instance.
While we're on Bobby,
he's certainly taken up the started to fill the void that Daniel Georgescu's left. Then, hasn't he?
Yeah, that's almost where I was going to go with my comment. He really has picked up that spot both in positioning and spirit. Is it interesting, though, that he was on for most of this game after his starting in the team was delayed so long for we were told he was going to struggle in the heat. Was this the game that we expected to see him lasting all the way through, Matt?
I was certainly surprised. I mean, I was struggling to watch it sort of sitting in the office in the aircon, let alone actually running around outside. So, if there's ever an issue with a player sort of in heat, then you'd expect that these sort of games in January, Feb are the ones that are going to really, you know, test you out. But, you know, he's been here since preseason now. If I remember correctly, he's had all the summer to like acclimatise. He's probably spent a few days down at Merriweather Beach, you know, enjoying the Australian summer. Had a few backyard parties and a few barbecues. I'd say he's probably as acclimatized as what he's ever going to be.
So we've warmed him up now, and maybe Deansy is a little bit less tolerant of that kind of excuse than Ernie was. So Western United, they started this season quite well, Luke. They started strong. They've lost some players. They've had some injuries. On paper, they probably should have taken us on the weekend. Do you think this draw would have felt like a loss to them?
It's hard to say. I probably feel like they would have looked at the table and thought, oh, look, everyone else has beaten the Jets, so we'll get an easy win. But like, I'm not really convinced by them, and I wasn't convinced at the start of the season. Matt mentioned earlier that a lot of the team are old blokes, and we sort of saw that on the weekend. You know, Diamante didn't play, but with, you know, Durante, Kone, Berisha, these are guys who, you know, they should, well, especially Durante and Berisha, they should be used to these sort of conditions playing here for years, but they just seemed lethargic, like less so than we were. I thought watching the first half, we went out all guns blazing. And I thought, right, we're going to get to halftime and we're going to be absolutely spent and they're going to run over the top of us from there. But even after halftime, they just looked like they were happy to just sit back, soak up the pressure and just get through with a draw. They didn't really look like they wanted to do anything. So if I was a supporter, in their shoes, I'd feel disappointed that we didn't come away with a win, but I feel like they should feel somewhat relieved that they didn't come away with a loss because, you know, the performance in the game, there was no way they deserved to win.
So they are still up in finals contention while we are languishing down at the bottom of the table. They've had one win in their last five. We've had no wins. So this draw, I guess, was kind of a highlight for us. Matt, do you see it as something we should celebrate, or are you with Luke that we really could have won that game?
Could have, should have, almost did, but didn't. And that's like all part of being a Jets fan now, isn't it? I think that the day that we start celebrating draws when we're coming last means that everyone has set the bar way too low. Disappointing to have drawn that one. Definitely 2 points lost rather than 1 point gained. But you could say the same about last week. So until we can get some more stability and until we can get a bit more quality in the squad, whether that's through, you know, coaching and bringing some people through, or recruitment, and you know, we've obviously done a little bit of that over the last couple of weeks as well. I don't think that you can really expect anything else. We're just not good enough.
Okay, so let's end on a positive to wrap this game up. Who's your man of the match, Matt?
That was actually really hard to pick, but I'm probably going to go with Topper. Less for, you know, his contribution and more for his, you know, willingness to contribute. You know, to see the old bloke still trying to get forward and get his head on, or, you know, look for through balls right up until, you know, like, well, in the last 10 minutes of the game, just goes to show that he certainly wasn't, you know, happy to just be playing for a draw. So, yeah, I'm going to go with Topper.
All right, decent shout. Luke, who are you going with?
I said this person in the post-game video the other day. I do want to just mention Boogs as being up there. I thought him shutting out Berisha was, you know, he got on top of him early, and that sort of shoved him out of the game. But I think for me, the player of the match was Burns. I thought, you know, for all the talk about him melting in the Australian summer, him bursting forward was fantastic, and I thought defensively he did well too. So I'm going with Burns for my player of the match.
I'm going to go flip to you. I'm going to go honourable mention to Burns for not dying and maintaining that level of energy, even though he must have been combusting inside. But I'm going to go with Boogs. He surprised me. I thought Boogs was done for this year and maybe for his career, and didn't think we had much to see from him. And the way he kept at Berisha for the game and managed to walk that fine line between getting sent off and keeping a striker distracted, I thought was quite impressive and showed what he can do when he is playing well. Okay, if no one has anything else that they want to mention about that match, then let's move in. We rolled, we were supposed to roll almost straight in from the A-League to the W-League at McDonald Jones Stadium on the weekend. But as Luke said earlier, W-League did get delayed an extra 20 minutes because of the heat. It was a win for the girls. It was a 2-0 win. So this was the game that was previously delayed for Smoke Hayes Heat, against Adelaide United. And we did manage to beat them 2-0, which we've not had a win for a while in the W League. We're sitting on a total of seven points for the season, seventh place overall, which with only the top four going through in the W League is well out of finals contention. Luke, did you hang around for that much?
I didn't. I was that cooked from the men's game that I didn't even think I was going to survive that, to be honest. So I didn't stay around. But for the people that did, I'm glad that they were able to see a win from the girls. A good performance. It was one that was sort of a bit up in the air as to what sort of Adelaide we'd expect, because they only picked up the first win of the season the week before. But it was against the second place Western Sydney Wanderers, which was, you know, that's an incredible result for Adelaide. So I was a bit hesitant as to how that would actually work for our girls, whether we'd get Adelaide on a high again, having beaten one of the top teams, or whether we were able to sort of bring them back down to earth with a win. Like, as you said, 2-0 win. Can't ask for much more than that. And we had our own Tara Andrews move up to equal third in the Golden Boot race in the league,
which is pretty impressive given where we're sitting on the table. To be even in contention for that is quite impressive. So Tara did get her goal through a penalty for a handball. The general feeling was it was a little bit... what's the word? Bad luck on the part of the defender. We've had a few of those in the A-League this year where it's like, ref, where is the hand meant to go? Matt, have you seen that handball? Do you feel the same way about that?
I saw the lead up to it. I can't say I saw the handball. I saw that it was another good cross by Tessa Tamplin in almost the same position as when she scored, what, last week or the week before. Oh, obvious. I only watched the replay, like the sort of mini match of it, and they didn't really show sort of replays of the actual incident itself. They just sort of showed it from the one camera angle and sort of showed to Adelaide players sort of trying to crowd out our striker, and then apparently it went away for a handball. So yeah, can't really comment.
Well, I guess bad luck is bad luck. And, you know, getting the pen awarded is only half of the job. And Tara did manage to put it away and make it count. And, you know, we've had a lot of those bad calls go against us in our day. So harsh call is still a call, I guess. We had our second goal through the substitute, Renee Pountney, is that how I say her name? I don't know. Should have checked my pronunciations first. I'm not SBS. I'm not Lucy Zelick. That was a pretty nice goal, though. Composure, I think, is the word for that one, Luke.
Yeah, she had a bit of time on the ball there for her goal, but it was good to see her get off the mark. And it's good to see someone in the club being able to finish a chance off. and with Tara as well, someone who can consistently hit a penalty. She's very, very, she just nails them. So get her in with the A-League team and get her teaching them how to take a penalty, because at the moment, you know, we've had what, one penalty this year, which Dimi missed and then scored when Beerus came off the line. And, you know, with Roy back, I dare say he'll be taking over the penalties, but I'm not convinced about him either, taking them after the three misses he had last season. So, good on both the girls. And as we said, Tara Andrews being third in the Golden Boot race for where we are on the table. You know, it's a great achievement, and we're lucky to have a player like that is playing in the local leagues in the W League off-season.
Yeah, no, that is really very impressive, and I'm glad that you've mentioned it, because I think that is definitely worth noting. Also worth noting, as well as the fans who did manage to stay around for those two games, there are a few tweets about how many people had disappeared, but I suggested they should perhaps look under the seats for puddles of melted spectator. I just want to do a quick shout out to the W League active support. They've been in fine voice this entire season, and they've had a few. The last two games at McDonald Jones Stadium have been very warm, and they have not let that deter them at all. I would like them to retire the Baby Shark chant. That is hurting my brain just a little bit. But other than that, absolutely no complaints. Those ladies and gentlemen are doing a fabulous job in active support. And maybe some of the other active support would like to stick around and talk to those girls, because they are doing a wonderful job. Does anyone else have anything to add on the W League before we move on to previewing next week's match for the A League? No, the season's basically over. We're not making the finals.
It's got to say, sorry, it's good, Matt, to see at least one of our teams not on the bottom of the table. And, you know, hopefully next couple of weeks versus Melbourne and Adelaide again, then what, we could possibly even get up to, what, a respectable seventh or eighth?
Yep, we are in seventh right now. We could move up to eighth quite easily. Probably very unlikely we're going any higher than that, and we're definitely not going to make the four. Not even sure if it's mathematically possible at this stage, but yeah, we are definitely not the worst. And, you know, as an Overcastrian, that is the thing I like to focus on. Adelaide are well down the bottom of the table, and Perth Glory, so, you know, we're not sucking the hardest, and that's nice, because in the A-League we certainly are, which is a lovely seg into the Wooden Spoon / F3 Derby coming up this week, Sunday afternoon. Has anyone checked the weather forecast? Is it meant to be hot, or is this rain going to be a problem for us?
We're supposed to get a lot of rain from Thursday till well into next week. So I think it's supposed to be mid-20s in terms of temperature, but water on the pitch may potentially be a problem.
Yes. Well, other than the weather, a very important talking point this game is, boys, Roy is back. I'm just going to start by saying we expect Roy to play. I'm in two minds about Roy returning to the club. In partly feels like winning the breakup, and it partly feels like getting back together with your ex because you're afraid to be alone. I am looking forward to seeing him play, but I'm feeling very conflicted about being a supporter in this moment. Luke, are you looking forward to seeing him play? And do you think bringing him back is the right decision?
I was on Team Roy Stay at the end of last season. I know there was a lot of people who were torn between whether they wanted him to stay or whether they wanted to get someone else. I sided with he's our second highest goal scorer at the club, and we're probably better off in our current position to stick with what we know rather than go with an unknown. To hear he was back, I don't know, maybe wasn't as excited at first as I maybe had been, you know, when he was originally announced at the club a couple of years ago. But he has what we don't have at the moment, and that is goal scoring boots. So anything to improve the team at all is what we need. And I think if he gets given half the chances that we are getting at the moment, he'll at least score some, which is more than we can say for how we've sort of been going aside from that. So I'm looking forward to him coming back. Penalty duties, maybe not, but he scored 6 goals in Brisbane. He's currently their top scorer, and our current top scorer is on 3. So anything, you know, if someone's still going a goal every 2 games, get them in here and get them on the park as soon as possible, because we need all the help we can get to get off the table, off the bottom of the table.
Yeah, from memory, 2 of those that he scored in Brisbane were penalties as well. So maybe he's turned a corner there. Only thing I can really add about Roy is that, you know, if we brought him back, look, I'll be honest, and I've sort of said it on the socials and whatnot, I wasn't happy to see him come back, but I think we need him. I just hope that we got him back on a cheaper deal than what we offered him at the start of the season. I'd hate to think that we actually offered him more now to bring him back after he sort of thumbed his nose at us. I know that he's sort of come out and said that it was because it was a 2-year deal up there and blah, 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 but at the end of the day, he could have stayed, and he could have stayed on a 1-year deal and played well and actually played for a full season, unlike the 2 half seasons that he's sort of given us over the last couple of years, and earn another contract. So I'm really sort of torn about this one. As much as I hate to see us recycle players a la Hull, I sort of agree with what Luke said. I don't think we can sort of get past this opportunity at the moment to add another sort of striker to the team, and one that's going, you know, is going to look a lot more confident in front of goals than the stocks that we've currently got.
Yeah, well, look, if he's coming back, I'm glad he's coming back against the Coasties. I guess that's how I'm looking at it. He's bringing young O'Toole with him from Brisbane. Are we happy with that signing, Matt?
I'm struggling to actually... I remember when O'Toole was playing last year and he was looking pretty good, but did he get injured at the start of the year? Was he out for sort of the first half of the year or first third of the year? Because I don't think I've seen him play too much, you know, this year anyway. Was he over with the Oli Roos in the latest camp, or didn't he make it?
He's just come back from the Asian Championships with the Oli Roos, so I assume he probably had something to do with them earlier in the season.
He certainly didn't play any of the games over there anyway, but yeah, I've got a feeling that he might have been injured in the latter part of last year or early this year, and he's missed a big chunk. But he certainly seemed tidy enough. I guess they're already planning for life after Burns.
Yeah, well, Burns is only on loan, so I guess we do need to think about that. And with Lockie Jackson going out, I guess defenders are in slightly more need than they used to be. So yeah, I think we could have done worse than this signing. So I'm not terribly sad about it. We might also see we were promised at this. Well, we were promised. We were teased with the idea that we could see Wes back in the last match, and they decided not to risk him at the last moment, and probably the best with the Heat and coming back. Luke, do you think we're going to see Wes play in this match? And if so, do you think it's going to be the big difference that we need to actually convert one of these many chances?
I would like to see Wes back. I honestly didn't expect him to play on the weekend, even given all the talk about him being named in the squad and everything. I just thought if he's coming from Europe and his first game back after getting a serious injury and sitting out, you know, missing 3 to 4 months, he's on a day where the temperature was sort of up around 43 degrees Celsius. It's probably not the best conditions for him to come back to. I think him coming back into the squad will help us in that it'll take some of the creative pressure off Dimi, but he's not going to help the scoring issue. Like, him coming back into the squad isn't instantly going to cure everything. He's not going to be the one who's up front scoring the goals, and he's not the one who's at the back defending and trying to stop goals from being scored. We have managed to cut back on all the 4+ goals per game we were conceding at the end of December, start of January. But him coming into the squad, I feel it's going to take him a couple of weeks at least to get back into the rhythm of things. He's not going to be match fit straight away. But as much as I want to see him play and perform and do well and everything, I don't think he's necessarily going to instantly cure all of our on-field issues when he gets back onto the field. I think it goes a bit deeper than that.
Yeah, fair call. Yeah, fair call as well. And I think a lot of it's going to have to do with the formation that we employ, because if we stick to this 3-5-2 that we've had, and I don't know about you guys, but I'm expecting if we sort of keep that, the three at the front are going to be Dimi, Arroyo, and Roy. Hoff drops to the bench. When one of them comes off, where do you sort of slide Houlihan into the mix, unless you sort of switch back to that 4-2-3-1 sort of formation that we were sort of playing earlier? I think when we were playing that, you had the options where Dimi and Wes were sort of switching from the 10 to the wide right role quite frequently, but I can't really see Wes sort of being employed in that striker role, nor can I really sort of see Dimi doing it. So it'll be interesting. And it's probably a nice problem for the incoming coach to have to deal with, like actually having a couple of players to pick from. But agree with Luke, he's going to be well and truly out of match fitness coming back. I'm sure, being the professional that he is, he's done everything that he can to get his body right. But he's no spring chicken.
All right, so we probably see Wes getting a run. We probably see Roy getting a run. So, Luke, who gives way for those blokes to have a go?
I would say if Wes is playing, he's coming off the bench at least for the first week or two. Roy, I think, goes straight into the squad. Who comes off? That's a tough one. I feel like with the formation we're currently playing, you'd probably have to say Hoff goes to the bench, because Arroyo's, he hasn't lit the world on fire, but I can actually see him, you can sort of see what he wants to do. And I think, as Matt said earlier, he doesn't look the sort of out-and-out striker. And if we're going with two up front, he may be a bit deeper lying than Roy, and sort of pull the defenders apart and allow Roy more space and drag him apart and let the wingers come up and do their thing. So I'd probably go with the front two of Roy and Arroyo.
Yeah, I'd probably expect, wanting to keep a bit of continuity about the team, that they'll do exactly that. It'll just be a switch out for Hoffman for Roy, which probably means that Costa Petrados is going to miss out on the bench when Houlihan comes in there as well. I would expect that I think Arroyo sort of naturally drifts to the left hand side quite often as well. You'll quite often find him sort of in that left hand channel, sort of playing more like an inside left position rather than out and out striker. We know that Roy will certainly have the work rate, and being right footed, it sort of makes sense to sort of deploy Roy on the right, Arroyo on the left, and see how we go.
Yep, great. I agree. Love Hoffy a lot, but mate, you've earned some time on the bench. Have a rest. What about the coasties from the flip side, Matt? What coasties do we need to watch out for, if any?
Matt Simon, if he gets on the pitch with Roy, there'll probably be two red cards.
Fair call, Luke.
We need to watch out for their new signing, Chris Harold, because he has a habit of scoring against us anytime he plays us when he's been over in Perth. So I'd probably expect that he's going to make an appearance at some point in the game. And if so, he'd be the one that I reckon would cause us some issues moving forward.
I think that young bloke Severino might actually be back from his trial at LA as well. And he was looking quite good earlier in the year. He was very quick. He was very direct and just absolutely not what we want to be running at Boogs or Topper. So, if he's back, I think he'll certainly cause us a few problems as well.
Okay, and Matt, how much does this game mean to us? It is, I've said already, it is the Wooden Spoon Derby. It is the battle for the lower two positions, but it is our derby. How much does it matter for us to win this game?
Emma, it could be 55 degrees and been pouring rain for 2 days where I've actually got to get in my tinny and take the tinny down the M1 to get there, and I will still make it. This is more important than that last grand final. It's more important than any other game that we could possibly be involved in for the rest of the season or last season. If we don't win this, we're 100% going to finish bottom. And I don't think that any true Jet supporter should be, happy with that as an outcome. We can't draw it. We can't lose it. We have to win. And to top it off, it's against the Central Coast, so we should.
Yep, agreed. Super important. Luke, I probably should have talked about this back when we were talking about the signings earlier. One of you mentioned it's a good position for the new coach to be in. Mate, are we ever getting a new coach? Like, this is dragging on now, isn't it? I think I remember someone saying on the 24th it was going to be announced, and we're now on the 4th of Feb as we record this. Are we getting a coach?
I feel like after Ernie was sacked, we were told we'd have a coach within 2 weeks, and it's been at least 4. So I hope we do. I know, there's been a lot of talk about whether it's going to be Robinson or whether something's happened. He was out here for the game against Melbourne City, but whether that's fallen through and we're sort of just going to stick with Deansy until the end of the season, I don't know. It seems like it's dragged on for a while, and at least with the other teams that have sacked their managers this year in Victory and the Wanderers, they've at least come out and said that their caretaker coach would see out the season. If that had been the case, we were told that we would have Deans in for the rest of the season, I probably wouldn't feel, it's almost like some anxiety, almost like, who is it? When are we going to hear something that, like, how long is this going on for? If we at least knew that he was here, if Deans was in for the season, then, there's, we probably wouldn't have this much talk about what's actually happening with the incoming coach.
Yeah, I could be patient if we weren't told that it was going to be a quick turnaround. It is a weird limbo to be in that I'm not enjoying at all. Matt, do you think there's something going on? Do we need to worry? Is this just the normal machinations, or where do you think we're at with this?
To actually bring someone out and have him sitting next to Laurie for an away trip indicates that we were sort of pretty close to reaching an agreement, and for it to have stalled for so long now makes me think that, that there's been issues with the negotiations, which, it's not unusual when you're sort of talking contracts that, there'll be little hiccups along the way, and whether they're sort of professional or whether they're family reasons, whatever might be the case. But the longer this drags out for, I'm really sort of fearful that there's only going to be one outcome, and that is if we still sign him, we're going to have to pay more money than what we were before. So, let's either hurry up and sign the bloke or announce who your new target is.
Maybe we'll do a Roy. We'll let him go somewhere else for 6 months and then sign him again afterwards.
Sven. just announce Sven again. At least it was a distraction.
Yeah, no, we are really getting dragged along in this, and I think it would be nice to get an update on what's happening, if anyone from the club is listening. Boys, I did neglect to get your tips. Do you think we can win this derby, Lukey? What's your tip?
I absolutely think we can win this. We've gone close. You know, we've performed very well against a couple of top teams in the last month. We should have beaten Wellington. We probably should have beaten Sydney as well. So I'm hoping that now that we're up against a team down our end of the ladder, we actually finish the job off. So I'm going to say Roy's going to jump in and get a hat trick on debut, or returning debut. 4-0 Jets. Hey, Bodes.
Matt?
I don't know. I agree partly with your comments there, Luke. I'm not sure that we were sort of going to beat Sydney necessarily, but I certainly think that we need to be positive for this one, and given that we've just got a gun striker first game for the club, I'm predicting him to score a hat-trick and for us to win 5-2.
Wow, it doesn't take much for Jets fans to get their confidence back. I'm terribly concerned we're going to do what we did last year and be all geared up to take the coasties and then balls it up at home. So I really hope that doesn't happen again. And I do want to be more positive, but I'm going to go ahead just to avoid the disappointment and tip a draw for this one. And I think we can get a goal, so I'm going to go a 1-1 draw. But please don't let us down again, I guess, Jets. Can't take it against the Coasties, but at least it's not going to be so gosh darn hot. Boys, do you have anything we need to add about this upcoming match? Have I missed any goss?
Not that I know of. I think a lot of the talk has just been about when the coach is coming in more than anything else. So, until that happens, I dare say it'll just be business as usual.
That goss will be good goss when it comes down. All right, well, we are coming up to our hour, so all that remains for me to do is remind you that we are a very unprofessional media empire, but still a media empire at that. Please find us on the socials. We are at Jetstream Newey on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. If you're listening to us, you obviously know how podcasts work, so I won't explain that to you. And I guess I need to thank my contributors for tonight. Thank you for putting up with some small internet issues that I hope our producer takes care of in the post. Otherwise, talk to your local politician, everyone. They're the ones who control the internet. Thank you very much for putting up with it, boys. Thank you, Matt.
Thank you, Em. Come on the Jets. 180.
And thank you, Lukey.
Thanks again, Em.
No problem. I guess all that remains to say is go the Jets.
Go the Jets.
Go the Jets. Oh, I'm down, Benjamin.